Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. Before we get started today, make a little announcement. We do have our Amphora beverage class series continuing on this Saturday. We're going to be doing a class on the wines of Eastern Europe. So anything that was under the Iron Curtain, Slovenia, Bosnia, Hungary, Croatia, pretty exciting wines. It's one of the most interesting up-and-coming wine areas, multiple areas. So get your tickets at Amphora Wine Series at we'll post it because I can't remember the link. But if you go to the Amphora website, we'll have a link to it and hope to see you there. All right. So without further ado, I am very excited today to have a buddy of mine from the industry. We have Alex LaPratt here. Alex is the sommelier and co-owner of the restaurant Atrium that's been getting tons of buzz in Dumbo. Very, very welcome to, I'm sure, a very welcome addition to Dumbo. And you're a welcome addition to our show. It's good to have you, Alex.
Thank you very much, Joe. I'm very happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about how you got started in the industry. A kid growing up in Detroit, all places. I've met a few people from Detroit. What are people, Detroiters? What are,
yeah, Detroiters. I mean, in all honesty, very rarely are we actually from Detroit. We're usually just outside the city. It's pretty spread out.
Yeah, our old chef de cuisine at Delanima, Mike Berardino, is from Detroit. I don't know if you know him, but I feel like I've come across Dave Foss, who's kind of our head bartender at Amphora, a Detroiter or maybe suburb of Detroit. Tell us about like what your childhood in Detroit and.
Well, it wasn't all like dilapidated buildings and gunshots, I know, but it was pretty exciting. I actually started in restaurants. It was my second job. Ever since, I've always worked in restaurants. My first job, I was actually a grocery bagger. At 15, my stepfather was like, "Hey, son, time to get a job." So I started doing that, but I had a buddy that worked there with me, and he was kind of a screw-up, so he got fired. But then he started working at a restaurant around the corner. He was making like $10 an hour cash, and I'm like, wow, I gotta get out of this, you know, grocery store bagging job. Although later I put on my resume, I was a packaging engineer.
No, that's fantastic.
yeah, for a grocery bagger, you know, I thought it was clever.
And so that was your first foray into to restaurants, I guess. What was the restaurant? What did you do?
It was Big Boy. It was just kind of like a burger shake, family style chain. Through the Midwest, mostly
with the big statues,
yeah. And the big burger. I mean, we all saw it, like Austin Powers. He had like a Big Boy statue or something. That was it. That was my start.
Everyone, you know, has a humble start at some point, right?
Yeah.
what lessons did you learn during your time? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I know, right?
what was your first restaurant job where you're like, huh, this is something I want to be doing?
Oh, it took a little while. I went from Big Boy. As soon as I turned 18, I could serve alcohol, so I went to another chain called Papa Vino's. Luckily, I started dating a girl who worked at a deli, which was across from in the same complex, same company of a fine dining restaurant called Morel's in Michigan Bistro. And she was like, you should try to get a job there. I think you're going to, you'll make a lot more money. And I said, okay. So I tried and I tried and I tried. And finally, I got in for an interview. Luckily, I just kept calling until they were finally like, all right, let's just give this kid a job. So I started working there. I was 19. And what I didn't know at the time...
Smart move to listen to your girlfriend.
Yeah,
huh?
girls are usually a lot smarter than me. I try to listen to their advice. But luckily, the beverage director was a master sommelier, Madeline Trifon, who is an amazing person, touches pretty much everyone involved with wine in Michigan. And her office was right upstairs, and she worked for that company. I had no idea, so I just got very lucky.
You had no idea that she was a master sommelier, or what that even meant, or
I didn't even know what a sommelier was. I think I read Wine for Dummies, just the Italian section at Papa Vino's, and I was like, oh, okay, that's something.
You know? And how long were you there? What did you do while you were there?
Oh, I was the youngest guy there, so obviously I had to work really hard, and I didn't really know that much, and you know, it was a lot of wine. Focused stuff, and I said to myself, anytime you're surrounded with someone, you know, that's very good or the best at something, you should really pay attention and try to soak up as much time as you could. So I imagine I was very annoying, and I was asking all these questions, and I was cocky because I was like, oh, I memorized the 13 grapes of Châteauneuf du Pape or whatever, and I was like, oh, I'm a genius. I didn't know anything. It was crazy.
And so you go from not knowing anything, but clearly you're very interested in it, to working at great places like French Laundry, Le Bernardin, Jean George. What was the next step in your evolution?
Yeah, so after that, I ended up going to college. I was pre-med. I was at Michigan State, and I was going to go to an alternative medicine school to study Asian medicine, but. You know, I said, well, I could do that for a while, and then maybe I'll open up my own restaurant. And I said, man, if I'm going to do that, I'm going about this all wrong. So I just dedicated myself to wine studies. I worked through a bunch of fine dining restaurants in Michigan. And then Michael Mina came to town in the Detroit MGM Grand Casino. I met Raj Parr, who's the beverage director for Michael Mina, and an amazing sommelier, awesome guy. And he was like, look, dude, if you really want to do this, you need to come out to the West Coast. So I, started looking for opportunities on the West Coast, and he was like, well, if anything comes up at Mina, I'll let you know. So I kept checking with him. He's like, no, nothing yet. So I applied to the French Laundry on kind of like, I don't know, I saw a posting for Soms online, and I wrote this really passionate cover letter, and I was really excited about it, but I left it open on my desktop for like 3 days because I was like, they'll never want me. I'm just this kid from Detroit. But I drank 3 Manhattans and I hit the send button. I was like, whatever. They called me back, so I went to French Laundry, and that's where the ball really started to roll and pick up steam.
Yeah, tell us about your time at French Laundry. You were a cellar sommelier there?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, basically it meant I flew out to take this SOM interview. I did like 5 interviews over the phone, and I got there, and their wine program was in a bit of a transition. But when they realized I didn't know a ton about wine and I wasn't that refined yet, they were like, well, we could offer you a food running position. So they offered me $10 an hour to take food from the kitchen to the guests in the dining room. And I was like, let me think about it. I go back and I tell my girlfriend at the time, we had a condo, we had, you know, all this nice furniture and stuff. I'm like, look, babe, I'm going to move out to the West Coast. I'm going to rent an apartment. I'm going to work for $10 an hour. I'm going to ask you to move back in with your mom, put all our stuff in storage. And that was
yeah, what did she say?
She was like, okay, I believe you. I trust you, you know? So I did that, and then I just worked really, really hard. I didn't take any vacation days, anything that needed to be done in the wine program. Like, yeah. I was a first to volunteer. Anytime something, you know, needed to be cleaned up, it was, you know, I'd love to do it. I was really excited to be there. I was really drinking the Kool-Aid. It was a great environment. So eventually, I made myself so indisposable that they created a whole new position, yeah, that they had it per se, but never at French Laundry, called the cellar sommelier.
And what year was this?
This is like 2007.
2007.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, you win the award for best sommelier in America. That seems like a very short amount of time.
Right.
You must have been hitting the books pretty hard.
No, every morning I'd wake up at like 7. It was so beautiful in Napa. This fog rolling off the vineyards. A cup of coffee. You read through your note cards, you know. And then I had a great mentor there, Dennis Kelly, really helped me. And then 2009, November 1st, I moved to New York just to, you know, keep pushing and expanding. And Daniel Jonas was kind enough to offer me the position of head som at DB Bistro, which was an amazing introduction to New York. And then while there, I just kept studying, and I saw that opportunity for Best Som in America competition. I didn't think, you know, in a million years I would win, because there's so many talented sommeliers out there. But, you know, it just all kind of came together.
Tell us a little bit about the competition. What were some of the most challenging aspects?
Oh, well, first of all, the intimidation factor, not only of your peers that are so talented, but also the judges. It's some of the best somms in the country that were there. I mean, Raj Parr, who I had known for, you know, quite a while since the MENA days, was there. He was one of the judges. There was Lisa Granick, Master of Wine. Let's see, Robert Bohr was there. You know, Andrew Bell. I mean, it's just all these people you read about, but at that time I didn't really know. Yeah,
all of these people
well.
Who are so smart. They're all great people, but they're intimidating in how smart they are. Every single one of them.
No, I know.
I love them all.
God, these guys are amazing, and here I am, like, I just hope I don't mess this up.
That's awesome. What was a big highlight for you, other than obviously the win?
Yeah, the service portion was the most exciting part for me, because that's where, you know, that's what I do on the floor every night, and I always have. So I feel like it's an area that I excel in.
Walk us through. Did they give you some ridiculous?
Oh, it was crazy. And then so you got Aldo Som there as well as the maitre d', so like even more pressure. And he's throwing curveballs left and right, and it's a dining room scenario with three active tables, and it's like you're actually in the restaurant, but then someone joins, but there's no chair, so you got to find a chair, but oh wait, you're supposed to decant that, you know, 67 Barolo over on this table, and they're still waiting for their wine pairings, and it's just like, how do you juggle all of that with grace and finesse and, you know, skill?
Yeah. And you clearly figured it out.
Yeah, I got very.
What's the tip though? What's your tip for how to kind of analyze all those things and put them in order in your brain?
Well, you know, I was kind of not necessarily on autopilot, but I was so used to doing that every day in the dining room mm-hmm. that made it really easy. But the thing I kept telling myself is not to be stressed out or be scared, but this was a great opportunity to share your passion with some of the best people in the industry, the people that are judging you or watching you. You know, so, you know, it was a real honor to be able to take care of them in that kind of situation. Yeah. And that took a lot of stress off my shoulders. A lot of pressure to perform came off and just allowed me to be myself.
Yeah. And I guess that we met during your time at DB Bistro. I really have to say really, truly one of the best restaurants anywhere near that area.
Yeah.
You guys really performed on another level. And to be able to be in Midtown near the theater and still be able to get like a super high quality meal is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was super fortunate. I look back on it. I didn't when I was leaving California in French Laundry, I was thinking, oh, DB Bistro, it's a bistro. I don't know that much about it. I've read about Daniel Jonas and Daniel Ballou, but man, did I ever get lucky.
Yeah.
That was the best thing to happen to me, probably.
So DB Bistro is kind of famous for the truffled foie gras,
but
probably
right.
As far as I know, maybe started the trend for gourmet burgers.
Mm-hmm.
What's your wine pairing? If you could have any bottle that was on the list there for that truffle foie decadent burger.
That thing is so rich and so big.
Could you
and
eat
juicy.
A whole one?
No, I can't. I can't. It's also got short ribs in it. It's short ribs, foie gras, and like beef. It's intense. And truffles. You know, if I
deep
could
fried
anything,
and drizzled with oil,
I know,
no,
basically no. Might as well be. It's so rich. It's like, you know, heart doctor's biggest worry, right? I would personally pick something like a Solera aged champagne, something, you know, oxidative. It's powerful. It's big, rich. I mean, you could always do like a vintage Solos if budget's not an issue, or something like.
Are there other? I mean, I've had the Solera aged mm-hmm. champagne, but I actually don't know of any others. Is that somewhat common?
One of my favorite is Henri Bio. He does the Cuvée Letitia, and it's actually the first Solera system champagne ever, and it's a little bit more fresh, I find, than Solos. So I think. I don't know. I think Skernik has it in the city, and it's awesome. I think it's about $80 wholesale or something like that, $70.
Okay, still not cheap.
No,
but
no, but amazing, amazing stuff.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds awesome. Okay, we are going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more of Alex LaPrat, the sommelier and co-owner of Atrium, right after this.
When it rains, her neighbors all complain. Little do they know.
You are listening to When It Rains by Four Lincolns on heritageradionetwork.org.
She says a lot of things. I think the river had its way with the old bear drowning.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
All this crowd and all this dirt. If I could just bring with me one thing, and that's love, 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 love.
Love, 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 love.
That's
love. That's all.
We're back on In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm here with Alex LaPrat of Atrium. Alex, so tell us a little bit about how Atrium came to be.
Well, it's really a collaboration of three partners, myself, the general manager, Leslie Affray, and the chef, Laurent Calcatour. We all met when I took the position at DB Bistro. We all worked there. And after I moved on to Atera, Jean-Georges, and Le Bernardin, we all stayed in touch, and we were talking about different opportunities. And so we started putting together like a plan, a business plan, and looking for spaces. We actually were starting in the West Village is where we were looking, because that's like so hot right now.
Yeah, it'd be great to have you as a neighbor.
I know, I don't want to compete with you guys.
Rents are insane though, but no, I mean, we never look at another like great restaurant opening up as competition. Yeah. It's always just like another reason for people to come to our neighborhood.
So true. So true. I wish we're actually waiting for more to open up around us, because we ended up taking a space down in Dumbo in the historic part. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's beautiful cobblestone streets. You can see the Brooklyn waterfront. There's the whole Brooklyn Bridge Park, but there's not a lot down there yet. So people don't know to kind of venture down there for dining.
Hey, I think it's a super smart move to go to Dumbo, a really underserved neighborhood. It's beautiful, historic. Great people there, but still not a ton, and close to the city, what proximity to the city,
yeah.
But not a ton of great restaurants.
And that area is so hot right now. There's so much development happening, a lot of residential and commercial, and like you just said, it really is just a few minutes away from Lower Manhattan. You got the Manhattan Bridge and the Brooklyn Bridge and all these great scenes, you know, scenic views, and I mean, it didn't take a genius to realize at one point, you know, waterfront property just outside of Manhattan is gonna develop, and we're kind of on the cusp.
Especially
of that.
Because so much of the waterfront in New York City is either like highways or industrial.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the few areas where it's just like perfectly situated to be scenic. You know?
I really do think it's the most beautiful neighborhood in all of New York. I really do. That and Brooklyn Heights are just gorgeous.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to throw into the mix my new neighborhood, Park Slope. I'm a big fan.
Let's hear it for Park Slope.
But okay, so when did you guys open up, and what was the opening like?
Yeah, so July 25th was our first day to the public. You know, and it just snowballed after that. You know, just very quickly. You know, when you're opening a restaurant, especially as an owner, it's all encompassing. You know, we basically live there. There's always at least one partner there, if not two of us.
Yeah.
You know, and it's intense, but a lot of fun. You know, and we've been really fortunate because that neighborhood, even though there's not a ton of people there, and there's a good amount of foot traffic because of the park, but we have a lot of regulars. So once people come, they always come back, which is awesome.
Fantastic. And what did you do with the wine program?
So there we're doing a lot of neat things. We have an extensive by the glass program. I'm a big believer that you can gauge a wine program by its by the glass offerings. It's an area that I find that is often overlooked, and a lot of people go right to markups on by the bottle. But I'm a big fan of in offering really, really high quality wines by the glass at a portable price. I'm also working with the Coravan. I helped develop that. You know, test
you
it
helped
out.
Develop the Coravan.
Well, I wish I helped develop it, but yeah. I just tested it out for a year before it got released because I think I'd be rich. That thing is so amazing.
It's amazing. We have it at all the restaurants.
Oh, awesome! Yeah, we're doing a bunch of old Rioja by the glass right now, back to 1970. I actually just had the Consejo from Rioja in the other day. For dinner, and it was awesome.
That's incredible.
Yeah, we were tasting all these crazy Riojas. But you can get them at Atrium Dumbo by the glass. They're very, very affordable, 70, 73, 81, 85.
One wine that I've heard a lot about that I've never had a chance to taste is older Muga. I've heard that Muga from the 78 and earlier is pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, I've had a few bottles of 70, and it was awesome. When I first came to New York, I think Tempranillo's a distributor. They had an old vertical. And I bought it, and it was amazing. We sold it out at DB Bistro. It was really, really good.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But, you know, and we're just trying to keep people involved and kind of expand their knowledge for wine and food in that area. You know, we've got a couple cool events coming up. Because we're subscribing mostly to the neighborhood, we've got Super Bowl. We're throwing a Super Bowl party on the 2nd. Renting a projector. We're going to project the game and just kind of hang out. You know, we've got a great cocktail program as well, in addition to the wines. But after Super Bowl, we have a dinner with Literai, one of my favorite biodynamic producers on the West Coast, the Sonoma Coast. Ted Lemon, amazing winemaker, and a good friend of mine, Rachel Dixon, is now their national sales manager. So we're doing a dinner with Literai on the 5th, awesome. February 5th.
How do you get tickets for that?
Eventbrite. And you can also go through our website at atriumdumbo.com and click on the events page.
All right. You might see me at that one.
Yeah. No, you should come. I love those wines. We're tasting a bunch of stuff that's just getting released, as well as some older Chardonnays and Pinots. But, man, those wines have such vibrancy, and they show so well. Really
yeah,
great
he's someone who's been doing really good wine for a long time. You have all these like great new wave California producers, but he's kind of he's been doing it the right way for a long
time. It's really cool. Like I hear stories about him and his wife like inside drinking coffee, like just chilling, and then there's like a coyote chasing chickens out in the yard. They'll just jump up and they'll run out and like chase it off and like bare feet, you know, and like, you know, like they just run out like no jacket or anything. It's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah, biodynamics, man. Gotta take care of the vineyard out there.
So tell us about the food at Atrium.
So the food is using a lot of French technique, which Laurent is classically trained. He worked for Ducasse and Boulud and you know, a bunch of other great French restaurants in France. But we're using basically the Brooklyn market, whatever you can find kind of in the Brooklyn area, to use local produce and more food that's, you know, more approachable for the neighborhood. We're not trying to, you know, get too crazy or reinvent things. We just want to make it really delicious.
I just love this idea of what you guys have going on. I've yet to dine at Atrium, but I've taken a look at the wine list, at the menu. It seems like there's so many just enticing things, and it is just very well priced. It's nice to be able to experience like your experience, the pedigree that you guys have, but it's welcoming, it's welcomingly priced, and I can't wait to get there, man.
Yeah, that's that was one of the things that's most important to us when we were doing this was to be non-pretentious in everything that we were doing, because you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money to have good service or to get a great product, I think, and you know, just make it really accessible. Come in with jeans or, you know, flip-flops, whatever, it's cool, come in, it's nice, and we're focusing on more than just the wine. We've got this great cocktail program. I was really fortunate to work with Payman Bahmani from PDT when we opened. He helped us put together the original cocktail list, and now we've just released a whole new cocktail menu. Super talented head bartender Peter Duff from Del Posto is with us. So it's a really great crew to come in and take care of the guests.
That's awesome. And something that that I'd always wondered about in that neighborhood was what the kind of late night business and mm-hmm. maybe early week business would be like, because yeah. of it being such a residential kind of neighborhood. Are you finding that you're able to keep it full later at night, and what's the kind of traffic pattern
like there? It's really expanding by word of mouth. Early week is always a bit more difficult. You know, Fridays and Saturdays, the weekend, we've got great traffic, people leaving the city or people deciding to go out, but it is an interesting neighborhood. We're starting to build that late night business though, which is great, because there's not a whole lot of options for awesome mm-hmm. cocktails in that area or a bar scene. Ours is really, you know, very warm and wood and, you know, all these great drinks. So people are coming late at yeah. night, which is great.
You know, and you know what? I absolutely love Vinegar Hill House. Mm-hmm. I love that place, but that's even further out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, and I've never been there where it has not been busy.
Right. Well, they were really smart. They picked an area and then just stuck with it and just stayed consistent. And, you know, eventually word of mouth spreads and people, if they have a good time, they come back, you know. One thing that we're getting ready to do is we're going to open for lunch here very soon. And we think that all the offices in the area are really going to, you know, receive it well. And we should see a big, big spike in business there.
Yeah, I absolutely agree that I think you guys are going to kill it for lunch. Yeah. And then, you know, I read somewhere recently that you're a fan of Zinfandel. Is that true?
Yeah,
we haven't had any sommeliers on the show that will openly admit to being fans of Zinfandel.
Well, after working with Thomas Keller at French Laundry, he was like, everything has to be, you know, American wine, and, you know, and he was really pushing it, but there's great Zinfandel out there, especially high altitude, cooler climate Zin. It's got great balance, great fruit, and it's very fun, you know. I think it gets a bad rap with all the over alcohol, flabby Zin out there, and Soms, you know, try to stay away from it. But if it's well made, I think it's delicious.
Can you tell us a couple of the producers that you really like?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Storybook Mountain. It's just across, like, if you're at Peter Michael's Vineyards mm-hmm. and you're looking out south, like, you can see it from there, and it's amazing. Same altitude, really, really great stuff. And the other one is from Kivira, which is in Dry Creek Valley, which is pretty warm, but they're a biodynamic producer, and it's, you know, it's not super pricey, but very, very well balanced. Delicious.
Yeah. Another region that I guess generally doesn't get a lot of props that I read that you're very into is Bordeaux Blanc.
Oh,
is that true?
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's underappreciated. It's like the Sancerre of the winter, if you think about it like that. It's got more texture and incredible minerality, and it's super food friendly. I love Bordeaux Blanc.
It's historically, maybe the main criticism would be that a little bit too oaky and not enough kind of pulp to stand up to that, but you're finding that there are more and more that are balanced.
Yeah, you know, it is true. You gotta pick your battles, because it's either no oak in Bordeaux Blanc and it's super inexpensive, or there's too much oak and you're paying a ton of money. But I usually go for second labels from top chateaus. Like right now I'm pouring Chateau Carbonneau Blanc, and it's amazing. The Blanc de Carbonneau, yes, it's really good.
That's a great tip. That's
yeah.
great. And now you've dropped the biodynamic word a few times mm-hmm. here. I just want to know what are your thoughts on? Is that something that you try to focus on, wines that make
you know,
use biodynamics in the vineyards?
I try to stay away from any set dogma if I can. I believe in well-made wine that's well-executed and delicious. And I also am a big stickler for value, because you know, I don't want to pay a lot for it. I want to get a lot of, you know, a lot of complexity, but I don't want to pay a lot for it. And biodynamics, you know, you can't necessarily quantify everything that goes on there, but it definitely puts the winemaker in the vineyard a lot more, and they really pay attention. And, you know, they're not using, you know, chemicals. And I think all of those things are really good. Those are good things. You
know? Yeah, I think so too. I think just preserving and promoting life in the vineyard in general tends to make wines that have a lot more energy.
Yeah, I feel like I can agree with that for sure.
Cool. Well, Alex, it's been such a blast having you on the show, man. I really appreciate it. I cannot wait to come check out Atrium. I hopefully I'm going to be able to come to the Litter Eye dinner too, because that's huge. That's awesome, dude.
Thanks, man. Yeah, we can't wait to have you. You know, it's always the best part of our day when we get to take care of someone else in the industry.
Excellent. And thanks to all of you for listening. I hope to see you this Saturday, 3:30 to 5 o'clock at Amphora. Go to the Amphora website to purchase tickets. And thanks so much for listening. We'll chat with you next week on In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.